weeping mothers, the lost fathers, and the forsaken children, and let them come quickly, for a voice of crying is heard out of Zion, for we are greatly confused, for death has come into our ghettos, to cut off the young men and women from the streets of Philadelphia, New York, L.A., Georgia, Ohio, Florida, Mississippi, and throughout America, South America, the Caribbean islands, Africa, Asia, and all over the world. So return unto me, thus saith Yah, and I will return unto you, O my people.
Welcome, listeners, to Time for an Awakening on the Black Talk Radio Network, new media for the new millennia. This is a history and current events program from a cultural perspective. We find this program necessary because Hosea 4:6 states, my people are destroyed for the lack of knowledge. But we as a people can turn this around. Proverbs 4:7 states wisdom is the principal thing. Therefore, get wisdom. With all thy getting, get an understanding. Again, welcome to the program this evening with your host, Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. The number to reach us to join the conversation this evening is 215-490-9832. That's 215-490-9832. We're streaming live at several locations. You can go to timeforanawakening.com. That's Time for Awakening, timeforanawakening.com, which is the home page, and listen to the live stream at that location. You can go to www.blacktalkradionetwork.com/timeforawakening. Again, it's www.blacktalkradionetwork.com/timeforanawakening. And listen to the live stream there also. Or you can download TuneIn to any of your carry-around devices, including your iPhone or your Android. TuneIn is a free app You can download TuneIn in the TuneIn search engine. Just type in Time for an Awakening. There you'll see the icon, and you can listen to the live stream to several locations, even into your car. That's Time for Awakening radio program with the live stream on the TuneIn app. Drop us an email at timeforanawakening@gmail.com. That's timeforanawakening@gmail.com. Time for an Awakening also has a fan page on Facebook. In that Facebook search engine, just type in Time for an Awakening. There you always see interesting content being posted daily. And before you leave that page, hit that like button for me. That's Time for an Awakening radio program with the fan page on Facebook. And Time for Awakening Media is also there, which is the homepage. It should be one of your favorites. If not, put that in your address bar and make it one of your favorites. That's Time for an Awakening radio program. At timeforanawakening.com will take you straight to Time for an Awakening Media. There you'll see more interesting content and future blogs, podcasts of the different programs that you can download, listen at later times, or even share with your friends. So again, make that one of your favorites and put it in your address bar. That's timeforanawakening.com. Timeforanawakening.com will take you straight to Time for an Awakening Media. Tonight, usually we're in a freestyle type of Friday, an open form format on Fridays, but tonight we're having a special guest is scheduled to join us, chair of the National Action Network Philadelphia chapter, an activist, Philadelphia activist. Sister Paula Peoples is scheduled to join us this evening to talk about the situation centering around the gentrification of North Central and North Philadelphia, the stadium issue, Temple University Stadium, other issues dealing with the North Philly area, and other topics that are paramount to the African-American community here, not only in Philadelphia in particular, but in black communities nationwide in general. We'll be back to get things started with our special guest after a brief word from our sponsors.
Mr. Moderator, our distinguished guests, brothers and sisters, our friends and our enemies. Everybody is here.
You are listening to Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts or live programming, hit them up at timeforanawakening.com.
All Insurance Incorporated, an African-American owned and operated insurance agency and business for over 20 years, located at 231 Southeastern Road in Glenside, PA, with other offices in Germantown and West Philadelphia. Call now for commercial insurance quotes, homeowners insurance quotes, automobile insurance quotes, notary and tax services, representing over 15 major A-rated insurance companies, offering a discount on all notary services if when you call in for a free quote. Call this number, 215-885-2444. That number is 215-885-2444. 215-885-2444. All Insurance Incorporated.
Before your roof becomes unruly, call Dooley. Dooley Brothers, specializing in shingle, rubber roofs, gutters, downspouts, and vinyl sidings. Call for your free estimate today. 215-224-3882. That's 215-224-3882. Dooley Brothers Roofing, the roofing experts you can trust. That number again, 215-224-3882. 215-224-3882. Before your roof becomes unruly, call Dooley.
Overworked? Suffering with an underperforming company, headache customer, staff, or vendors? Or are you a startup who wants to get it right the first time and avoid the costly mistakes? we turned a $24,000 a year odd job handyman service into a seven-figure high-end custom home builder and commercial contractor licensed and operating in three states. This is just one transformation created for entrepreneurs like you in various industries around the country. Not what you're used to from accounting and business consulting? Well, welcome to New Business Solutions. If you're ready to go beyond advising, coaching, and training and get implemented results, call 301-244-9072. Let New Business Solutions apply the best comprehensive administrative, accounting, operations, human resources, management, sales, and marketing to help you actualize your vision for yourself and your company. From anywhere nationally, call 301-244-9072. Spelled new as in numerous on your device right now. Book your free consultation at newbusinesssolutions.com.
History is a clock that people use to tell their political and cultural time of day. It is also a compass that people use to find themselves on the map of human geography. History tells of people where they have been and what they have been, where they are and what they are. Most important, history tells a people where they still must go and what they still must be. The relationship of history to the people is the same as the relationship of a mother to her child.
From antiquity to the present, our people need to develop a new paradigm. It's time for an awakening. With your host, Brother Elliot, Sundays 7 p.m., Fridays at 8 p.m. for podcasting or live program scheduling. Hit us up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com. Welcome back to Time for an Awakening. And before we get started with our program this evening, I want to welcome in my co-host, Philadelphia activist and tour guide at the African American Museum here in Philadelphia at 7th and Arch, Brother Richard. Is with us, Brother Richard.
Yes, sir. How you doing there, Brother Elliot?
How you doing, sir?
I'm doing fine. I have to say, hey, Elliot, I spent the day at the DIOP conference here in Philadelphia and dealing with one of the major topics is dealing with Afrofuturism. So as I listen to everyone, and, you know, I've always been raising this question about what does Black Philadelphia look like 150 years from now. And so I think our discussion, and hopefully it'll be understood from that context, I'm kind of looking, you know, still got all these talks and whatever in my head. So I'm glad Sister Peoples is with us so we can kind of dialogue about different things, looking at North Philadelphia as a large Black community, you know, with the development and the challenges like gentrification going on.
Well, you know, I guess it remains to be seen because our people can, like I mentioned, you know, when we start the program, our people need to develop a new strategy and a new paradigm because we can see what other folks have planned for Philadelphia and other cities with the Philly 2035 plan. They have plans for the city to look a certain way, to employ a certain group of people, to have a certain income level, and to get rid of poverty and undesirables, which translates into Black folks. We need to develop other plans and strategies to counteract these plans. We see them being put forth, neighborhoods being transformed. South Philly, the neighborhood yes. that I grew up in, from South over to Washington Avenue, is totally gone now. My old neighborhood is totally transformed. They're working on the other side across the tracks in South Philadelphia. They're moving in. They're already in certain neighborhoods in North Philadelphia. And the community is fighting back. And I guess tonight, Ms. Paula Peoples is the founder and president and chief executive of the Renaissance Community Development Corporation, which owns and manages the Renaissance Garden Apartments, which provides affordable apartment living in North Central Philadelphia since 1985. She's also the chair of the National Action Network chapter here in Pennsylvania. I think that she's with us on the line. Sister Peoples?
Yes, good evening, Brother Elliot. Thank you for having me. I am online with you, and good evening to Brother Rich.
Yeah, how you doing now?
I'm okay.
How are you? You know, we kind of let the program off. Richard made comments about being at the Diop conference, and they're talking about the future of our people here in this country and worldwide. And I kind of spun it off into our people's future here in this city. We see plans going up. It's already been proposed. People can see it, the Philly 2035 plan, which designates certain areas all over this city to be transformed in areas where our people have generally lived for decades, sometimes hundreds of years, especially areas in South Philly.
Yes.
Yes. So we see what's happening, and we see what's happening in North Philadelphia. It's happening rapidly in North Philadelphia. It's happening rapidly in South Philadelphia. The fight that you're involved in, yourself and Reverend McKenzie over there at the Church of the Advocate, talk about the fight. And we'll start the conversation off talking about that fight of surrounding the building of that Temple University football stadium.
The Stadium Stompers. The Stadium Stompers is a coalition of community residents with progressive students that are part of this effort. Temple thought that at one point that the group would dissipate and would not be around, but to our efforts and our belief and attempts, they were not able to be successful with that, and people continued there to struggle in order to win. And so Temple has pushed and continues to push with the support of elected officials. And in my humble opinion, being a native of North Philadelphia, born and bred right here in this area where Temple now is a neighbor, we still refer to this as a North Philadelphia, our home. And from what I can remember from a young child, we being Black people here, have had to fight against Temple's encroachment and expansion into our community. And the reason that they have been successful over decades is primarily because our own people have sold us out. Whether they be in elected or civic position, they take the small crumbs from the table that is offered to them, and they sell out the Black community. They sell out Black people. They sell out the indigenous of North Philadelphia. I have a Latino buddy that have run the CDC, a Community Development Corporation, for a long time, have done some positive development here in North Philadelphia. And he told me a few years back that they tell the Latinos, Puerto Ricans, primarily here in North Philadelphia, whatever they do, don't sell their house, don't move. And they have not done so. If anything, they have expanded. And now they're going to even grow to a greater level with what tragically happened on the island of Puerto Rico. So they're beginning to migrate to America because they are Americans to a greater level. So their population, particularly here in Philadelphia and New York along the East Coast, is only going to grow. My experience, I would say, in dealing with this struggle against Temple, and now it's the stadium. Before the stadium, it was William Penn High School. And I was on another radio program recently where I stated to them the fact that, yes, the National Action Network community, indigenous people, took up the fight to say, no, you're not going to tear down William Penn High School. Where are our children going to attend school? Two of my daughters are alumnus of William Penn High. And so they put up Black faces on white power like they always do. And the Black face that they used at that time was the local laborers, primarily Black union, Local 332. Dealing with Sam Staten Jr., Ryan Boyer. And when we went to them, they said, oh, no, we're partnering with Temple in tearing down the school, and we're going to relocate our training center from X in Pennsylvania, so that Philadelphians, people in the community, will be able to get trained in the trades. We're going to bring in the other trades, not just in the labor pool, et cetera, et cetera. But it was all bull crap. It was all bull, because at the end of the day, they just kicked them to the curb, which they knew they were going to do anyway, because they were just perpetrating a fraud from the giddy up. And Temple ended up building primarily an apartheid soccer stadium for their students. You drive by there, you walk by there anytime at Broad and Master, you're going to see primarily white students there playing whatever sports that they're playing at that particular time. When they have a game, it's so much noise, it's totally out of control. Can you only imagine building a stadium after moving people out of their homes in North Philadelphia on the west side of Broad, moving us out of our homes, building a stadium with 35,000 seats? They don't intend for black people to be here if, in fact, they're able to successfully get that stadium through Brother Elliot, Brother Rich. That's why we continue to dare to struggle and fight against them. We're not letting them take North Philadelphia like they did the inner city, chocolate city of D.C., Harlem, et cetera. We're not going to do that. We're going to continue to fight them, and we're not going to allow them to do that here. And that's what's going on. We've seen what they're capable of doing, especially with the support of elected black officials that run every 4 years, run every 2 years. They going to stab their own people behind their back. Case in point, another example, John Wanamaker Middle School, 11th and Cecil B. Moore Avenue. School was fine. That was our children's middle school. What did they do? Turn around, allow Temple and their speculators to tear it down to build a tall dormitory for students. Now they're talking about building another 800-unit apartment building on that same site. They already got about 1,000 units on near that space in Montgomery Avenue. Now they're talking about building another tall, towering building that will accommodate 800 students. And this is a university that survives as a result of our tax dollars. It's not like it's a private institution. It's a state-funded institution. And like I always tell people, they say, oh, Paula, you went to Temple. You damn right I went to Temple. I paid my own tuition, too. I don't owe them anything. They didn't give me anything. I owe no allegiance to them. My allegiance is to my community and to my people. And so, yes, we're continuing to fight against that and all the other gentrification that we see that is occurring around us. For decades, Brother Elliot, after pre-riot and after the riots, the factories that used to be here, a very healthy community that used to be here on the east side and west side of Broad Street, oh, they left the factories and they took white flight out to the suburbs. But what has happened historically, their children, they like the city life. So they have told their parents, you can stay out there in the suburbs. We want to move to the city. So, of course, Daddy Dearest with his deep pockets or his mom, because remember, they're dealing with generational wealth.
Yes.
They go on and they come in our community and they buy our homes, try to buy up Yorktown townhomes, which was built in 1960 to house working class, so-called middle class blacks. Oh, they're coming to our community trying to buy so many of the Yorktown private townhomes up. But what did we have to do? It took us almost 5 years to fight through city council to get an ordinance that says, unless you're going to live in the house, you cannot rent the house. You cannot rent and subdivide our townhouses into apartments, I mean, not apartments, rooms for Temple students or students attending Temple University. So it's been one struggle after another here in North Philly, but still we ride. We still ride.
Sister Peoples, what is some of the strategies that have been implemented to some of the folks that are still, because some of our people have sold their homes in different neighborhoods? I know my neighborhood of South Philly, a lot of people have sold their homes. What is the strategy that, because you mentioned about what some of the other nationalities are telling their people.
Right.
I know that you've been encouraging some of the people not to sell their homes in those areas. does it
and
seem
And some
to,
of them, Brother Elliot, I'm sorry, go ahead, finish your question.
No, I was going to ask, does it seem to be working? Is a lot of people still holding fast to their homes, or are they leaving, and what's going on?
Well, when we won the ordinance, legislative ordinance in city council that said no longer could they purchase the homes and subdivide the houses into rooms, pretty much based on what they used to call flats, as my parents told me about when they migrated here from Savannah, Georgia, how when my mother and father moved here with my older three siblings, they had to live in a three-story house that was Jewish-owned, and they subdivided the house into four or five flats. And that's how our people were initially housed. Well, pretty much, again, using a page from their previous family history, they're doing the same thing. They were coming in, buying a Yorktown house, putting in, subdividing it, and renting rooms in a three, what used to be a three-bedroom family home, with the basement would be another additional one or two bedrooms. And they were leasing it out during the school year to Temple students. Mm-hmm. So when we won that, had that victory in city council, that have really caused it to almost come to a standstill, because the speculators, as well as Temple University Real Estate Department, realized that if they bought a property from someone, that they were going to actually, the buyer was going to have to live in the house. Now, to answer your question, why were our people selling their homes? As was said to me by a number of seniors at that time, we're up in age, I'm, 70, getting older, I'm not going to ever get an opportunity to get this amount of money again. Talking about something like maybe $150,000, $200,000. When Yorktown was built, they paid somewhere between $13,000 and $17,000 for the home. Mm-hmm. So this was a big windfall for a senior citizen that's on a fixed income, maybe a retired teacher, et cetera, et cetera. And so it was difficult to talk to them not to sell their homes. So we had to go the legislative way, the public policy route, to be able to force them not to sell their house unless the particular person was going to actually live in the house. And we did the same thing here with Jefferson Manor, with townhomes, which are right across the street from Yorktown. So we were able to put a stop to that pretty much.
Okay.
Go ahead, Richard. People, does that mean that there's not also enough young, I'm going to call professionals or semi-professional, African-Americans with a certain income that is moving into North Philadelphia that could be able to acquire those homes so that the at least another generation can take over where the older generation happened?
Sadly, Brother Rich, yes, that you're correct. There are not enough of young, upward mobile African Americans, professionals, young people that are looking to move here in North Philadelphia, in the inner city. They don't see the vision that the white folks do, and those of us that remain here do. We know what their full intent is. The late Charlie Bowser told us, had to be about 20 years, if not 30 years before all this happened, that he had seen a plan at Temple University. But to our naivety at the time, we just couldn't imagine. He says, I've seen the plan, and white folks are going to be in North Philadelphia. They're going to build buildings to attract them. And we didn't listen to him at the time. We just could not imagine that white people would want to live in North Philadelphia. But we should have known, and we should have believed, especially when they did the Avenue of the Arts South and then start talking about the Avenue of the Arts North.
And didn't they do, I remember Rendell, when they actually, because they had to sell it as a book at one time, but the money
they had
went
what?
To,
I'm sorry, what did you
they
say?
Had they had to what? Sell, they had to sell Avenue of the Arts to, it said Avenue of, Rendell sell Avenue of the Arts South and north, but the money only went to south. It didn't
That's
go
correct. Oh, yeah, that's correct. Absolutely, yes. And so as a result of that, even though the wisdom and insight was stressed to us as young activists at that time by Charlie Bowser, we just could not imagine. But what he predicted, what he tried to sound the alarm to us in the 80s was actually it's coming about now. It does not mean that all is lost. It just means that we have to step up the game and we have to persuade our people to understand that we can win, just stick and stay like the other ethnic groups are doing. I talked to some of the poor white activists, and they're struggling also over there on the further east of the Yorktown, 13th Street, 12th, 11th Street, Carter. When you go east to ride, yeah, they're being gentrified out by their own people. So then it becomes clear that it's about economics. It's about class in that particular sense. They really don't care. They just want the convenience of access to Center City, access to business, the convenience of a university setting. That's what they want. We have young guys that grew up here in North Philadelphia, like myself. Let's say, for example, they grew up on Sydenham Street, the 1700 block of Sydenham Street. Now that so many of the properties on that block have been purchased by speculators or temple real estate, when they walk down the street, they're being stopped and harassed by temple police. And this is the block where this child actually was born and raised on. So gentrification takes on a various aspects when you look at it. It's not just the acquisition of property or real estate. It's deeper than that. It's actually where it infringes upon your physical freedoms, your rights to move about your community without being impaired upon by yet another police force.
Sister Peoples, you know, you mentioned earlier in the conversation, and I wanted to talk about them. In fact, I think that's going to be a major part of our discussion this evening, is the black politician and the failure of black politicians. You know, let me read this portion of this published report, and it's going to kind of spin off into something that I want to ask you as a black mother and a black woman in the community. This is from a published report. In fact, it was last year. I mean, it's still prevalent now, but just indulge me a little bit. It says the rioting in Milwaukee over a police killing of a black man was the issue of longstanding black joblessness. Between 2010 and 2014, Milwaukee's average rate of black joblessness was 54% compared to the rates of only 17 to 26% for whites, respectively among the city's white and Latino young male population. But the persuasive joblessness of young black men goes well beyond this industrialized city. Its effect are devastating on both young men themselves and their families. The U.S. Census Bureau, the American Community Survey, gathered data on jobless rates of non-institutionalized men, 20 to 34 years old. The average period from between 2010 to 2014 for 34 major U.S. cities. The data paints a grim picture for black men, particularly in the Midwestern, industrial, and mid-Atlantic cities like Milwaukee, Chicago, Detroit, Cleveland, Philadelphia, Baltimore, and D.C., all had black jobless rates above 45%. In these cities, young black men are either jobless or imprisoned more than employed. Now, if that's not a failure of black politicians, I don't know what is. Philadelphia, and you used to hear black folks and black politicians always wave this banner that they're a model for other cities as far as having a black leadership. At one time, you had black mayor, blacks all over city council, black fire chief, black commissioner. It was blacks all over the place. But it didn't translate into anything that's helping the community. To me, a black politician is supposed to do all he can to fight white privilege in every aspect of living for black people. That's your job. You can't get in those positions and then claim, well, you got to tell me what you want. Tell me what the community needs. Come on here. If you got a brain cell or a brain in your head and grew up black, you know what the community needs. Now, if you want to do something about it, that's different. But looking at the jobless rate, according to these published reports, and I'm going to go into a little more detailed jobless rate of certain neighborhoods in Philadelphia, which is above 45%. It says in some of these neighborhoods, it's the higher percentage of young men to be imprisoned or jobless than have a job. What does that say to these politicians? What are they doing? This is a disgrace. And then they wonder why some people, when they come around, the vitriol and anger for these people. I don't understand it. Ms. Peoples, maybe you can explain it. Some of these guys, and let me say this, some of these guys might be nice individuals. They're some family members, some friends. But it has nothing to do with the job of representing our people.
It's not personal.
It's not personal.
And you will find out something about me is that I believe in speaking truth to power. I don't care about the fact that there's someone that I've known for maybe 40 years because they too grew up in North Philadelphia. That's not something that is important to me. What is important is that we expose to the community that this person should not be reelected and why they should not be reelected. Unfortunately, what often happens, and it's I'm not trying to throw any shade against you or Brother Rich, but oftentimes we find ourselves in situations where we're actually having to go up against other black men. I'm not talking about black men that are in elected position. I'm talking about those who willingly allow themselves to be obstacles, to be the buffer between a people's access to dealing with calling a question on these people selling us out. So they'll put up their puppets to be the distraction. And as soon as black people start to have a heated exchange or confrontation, the indigenous community, people that are really sincere to learn about how they can do better and why they should not vote for this person, they get dismayed and then they walk away. Okay. And that's what we find happening oftentimes in community meetings and settings, at rallies. They say, oh, don't do that. Oh, you shouldn't say that about brother so-and-so. No, you got to be willing to tell the truth about what they're doing. And so I do. I know I have a lot of enemies as a result of that, because I do believe in speaking truth to power. But I believe that's the best way to educate people about who these individuals are. It is a shame before the Creator that Philadelphia, as an example, because this is where we live and we work and we reside, where we worship, has the highest poverty rate of all the urban cities in this country. Mm-hmm. High levels of unemployment while around us, we have a booming business and housing development going on in the city. That is shameful.
I know it.
That is shameful.
I wanted to, the listening audience to understand where you come from. Because it's important with what you're saying when you talk about speaking truth to power, and especially looking at Philadelphia. Now, I know that in other cities of people who are listening, you have the same kind of people like yourself. And the reason why I'm saying that, because I know that you as a young person were involved with the Panther Party.
Yeah, I was. That's correct. The Panther Party in Philadelphia, as well as out in Oakland, California. That's where I ended up. Yeah, I was 15 and a half years old when I joined the Black Panther Party. Mamiya Abdul-Jamal was also in the Panther Party at the same time. So, and I spent 5 years of my youthful 5 years in the Black Panther Party. So you're correct, Brother Rich. I come from a rich background in knowing who our enemies are, and speaking truth to power, not you know, being afraid to expose individuals regardless of the fact that we may share the same hue. That's not important. No more than it's important if someone of European descent comes forward and are willing to collaborate with us based on a particular issue. So it's all about how we're going to uplift our people, uplift our young men out of poverty to some level of self-sufficiency, free all of them. That's something we say often, free them all in relationship to our brothers and sisters that are in prison. I heard earlier, I can't remember, something on Word. Perhaps I was listening to Word, or I may have been listening to another progressive Black station, where the gentleman said slavery, being enslaved in America, has never ended. Right. It just has transcended over the years. And so the most recent form of enslavement is that of prison. And that's why you will find 6 out of 10 Black men have been arrested, perhaps are felons, et cetera, et cetera. And then with the level of felony, with attaching felonies to our people, in turn, they're not able to vote. So it's a systemic, a very strategic systemic strategy that they, tactic that they have utilized in trying to continue to keep Black people enslaved. It's no accident. Nothing that happens in America is an accident. It's all done on purpose. That's the first thing we need to realize as a people, that it's not accidental. It's not accidental about 45 being in office at this time. It's all designed, it's purposeful, and they intended to do this. It's tactical on their part. What we have to realize as a people is to make certain that we're tactical in how we respond to them, how exactly. We plan looking forward. Someone said something about 150 years, where will our people be? In my mind, unless we transform our thinking, especially dealing with our babies, the so-called millennials, X generation, et cetera, unless we give them consciousness the way I had it when I was 15 years old, 16 years old in the Black Panther Party, we may not even exist. As a people, do people make any reference to the indigenous Native Americans of this country? Very rarely, very rarely.
And, you know, Elliot, and sister people, you know, when I raise that question, most people, and I try to, you know, and do it informally at times because it bothers me so much because of the concern that you raised. Most people say the same thing that you're saying. I mean, mm-hmm. And that's at different regardless if they're young, regardless if they're professionals, regardless if they're just like, and I'm talking about me just walking up on people, Black Philadelphians, and just, mm-hmm. you know, that's because we don't see that way out, you know, but we do see if things keep going the way they are, what the possible conclusion is. So I appreciate you, you know, recognizing that, you know, we have to do different, and we have to touch that consciousness of those who are around us.
And that's what the whole slogan of Stay Woke is about. We can't afford to fall asleep. You know, we've already been through that. We thought we had the luxury of so-called the Black bourgeoisie, that somehow we had arrived. And again, it was another hoax that was played on us so that we would somehow stop struggling, stop confronting them on their various levels of racism and institutional discrimination against a people because of the color of their skin, because of their hue. we had to recognize that. We had to go through that. We had to go through that cultural transformation. And here we find ourselves again. Our children are dismayed because they don't understand fully what is going on and why. And as one young person said to me, Sister Paula, why do they hate us so? So we have to take the time to educate our children on such a basic level. Something as simple as that question.
We're in conversation tonight with Sister Paula Peoples, chair of the National Action Network chapter here in Philadelphia, or Pennsylvania, a chapter of National Action Network, and also a chief executive officer of Renaissance Community Development Corporation, which owns and manages the Renaissance Gardens Apartments, which provides quality, affordable housing to North Central Philadelphia residents. Let's go to the phones. 215 area code.
Hey, Brother Elliot, how you doing?
How are you, sir?
I'm doing fine. Hey, Brother Richard.
How you doing?
I'm doing well. Hey, Sister Paula, how are you?
Hi, Brother Joe. How are you, my brother? Good to hear your voice.
Likewise. Like when Elliot told me you was going to be on, I said, oh, my God. See, I love Sister Paula. You know, Sister Paula, you're one of my sheroes, Sister Paula. You know that. I love Sister Paula. I don't say this about a lot. I love the ground you walk on.
Oh,
I'm telling
you,
I mean, that's sincere.
Brother.
I don't say that, but I just don't throw them words out carelessly. I love you, Sister Paula. You know that. And this is what I wouldn't
too.
Do for you, Sister Paula. We have more sisters and brothers like out here fighting for our people and is committed to our people, Sister Paula, like you are. Our people would be so far advanced right now. And I mean that sincerely, too.
We have to build them. We have to educate them. Because, you know, one thing we all must do is transition. And so
yes.
There cannot be a void left.
That's
after my transition. So that's why I always try to pass the knowledge on to encourage courage.
Yes, I couldn't agree with you more, Sister Paula, because I tell you, our people, we face so many obstacles and challenges today. You know, and when you was talking to Brother Elliot and Brother Richard just now about Philadelphia, I think you mentioned about how the economic boom in Philadelphia, but yet black people are seeing through, you know, residue from that. And it's the same thing, Sister Paula, and I was telling Brother Elliot this last week. I was in Washington, D.C. area over the weekend, Bethesda, Maryland, for a real estate conference. And so while I was up there, I read the paper in Bethesda, Maryland. So I had a newspaper box. It was a paper that they called The Express that's published by the Washington Post. And in there, they had a one- or two-page article, Sister Paula, where they were saying about right now as we speak, Washington is going through a big economic boom right now, and it's happening to a black female mayor. But unfortunately, Sister Paula, you see parallels, just like in Washington, like here in Philadelphia, the black community is not seeing no benefit from that. Only ones benefited from are white people, for the most part. So
that's
you got
right.
A black mayor. So you got a black mayor with an economic boom, but yet black people who look just like she is, they're not getting no benefits from it. I mean, something wrong
She's
with that.
She's not marrying Barry. She's not marrying Barry.
Thank you. And that's the key right there. Because Marion looked out for his people. And this is why, Sister Paula, that's his point of history we should really focus on. Now, Marion, when he went through his challenges, when he had his demons and stuff like that, black people still supported him when he got his stuff cleaned up. Because, see, I always tell people, Sister Paula, when you fall from grace or you make a mistake, if you do right by your people, even if you make a mistake, black folks won't forget you. And this is why when Marion cleaned himself up, black people had no problem reelecting a man to city council again. Because the man did for his people.
That's right.
And see, that's why I try to tell people when you do, and that's what I love about you, Sister Paul. You have always been on the front line fighting for our people. I don't care whether it's police brutality, lack of employment for black men, getting black men and women the right to vote after they serve their prison time. You're always on the front line. And that's why, Sister Paul, you will always be revering the black community because people, they know you, know you're committed to our people. You want to see our people strive and do better. And like Brother Elliot said, too many of our black politicians, male and female, they fell as the stuff. And like you say, Sister Paula, men grew up right in the hood. And yet they say they get in these offices, they forget where they come from. You know, they forget that they was out there struggling out like everybody else. Then once they get in office, like they attitude is that I'm now for everybody. Well, if you for everybody, then you say you're forgetting black people. And I always try to tell everybody, if you say you're for black people, that means you're for everybody. Like when you use that slogan, Black Lives Matter. When some white folks tell me, well, all lives matter, I say, well, black lives matter. I say, because the reason why we have to say black lives matter is because we know for forever white lives have mattered. So we got to put an emphasis on black lives matter because y'all white folks tend to forget that our lives matter too. So we got to emphasize that.
And clearly their lives matter. That's why they're doing so much better.
Exactly, exactly, Sister Paula. And like I said, Sister Paula, you know, like I said, it's just an honor and pleasure to talk to you tonight and stuff. Because like I said, you out there for our people. You always been committed to our people. And again, like I said, we could just take you, Sister Paula, and mold you and stuff. I'm not meaning to, because we need people like you on this front line, our Sister Paula. You've always been out there for our people. And so I never forget Sister Paula years ago. And I'll close with this: when beasts beat them brothers and stuff, kicking them brothers, and Fox 29 cameras picked it up, and it was kicking and stopping the brothers and stuff. And you rallied the community to make sure those officers was prosecuted. He got John McNesby, the head of SOP, at the audacity. Mm-hmm. Remember, Paul, he said, well, the cops was justified in kicking and stopping them. But them brothers had committed no crime, and there was one white cop, remember, Paul, he was going from brother to brother, kicking and stopping on them.
I mean,
this is the kind of stuff that white America's in denial about. See, this stuff happens to our people all the time. But see, it's unfortunately, a lot of times, Sister Paula, it's not put on film. So a lot of white America don't get to see it. When in the incident they get to see, you know, they can look at the same picture we look at, and they'll sit there and say, well, the cop was justified. And knowing darn well if there were some black police officers kicking on their white children like that, they wouldn't stand for it. You know,
absolutely. But one thing I want to say, Brother Joe, if Brother Ellie will permit me, mm-hmm. before you get off
yes.
the phone,
yes.
about because we can always talk about what they do because they have the upper hand. They have the power. But we also need to always give our people encouragement to tell them about the victories, no matter how small the victories are. So when you talk about that situation where the police snatched three black men out of the car, there had been a police shooting out there at the ShopRite out there on Aramingo Avenue, and they just grabbed, you know, any black dude, you know their policy, any black dude.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
so we end up taking up, the man end up taking up that struggle. And so through arbitration, like they always do, the police were able to go back and get their jobs. So McNesby and the FOP thought that they were going to have a big celebration in North Philadelphia down at the FOP old headquarters at 13th and Spring Garden. We
mm-hmm.
showed up there thick, showed out, and shut it down.
Yes,
after that, the FOP said, oh, we're moving to the greater Northeast. That's how we got out there. We shut down 13th and Spring Garden. We said, you will not rave and have a party here in North Philadelphia as a result of these cops that darn near beat these three young black men to death. Regardless of the fact we were able to get them off, they should have been arrested and they should have lost their job and not benefit from our tax dollars paying their salary.
That's
so
right,
it was a victory
Paula.
For the people.
You're right, Sister Paula. And that's why I'm going to try to emphasize more the victories, like you say, no matter how small they may seem, but it's a victory is a victory. So, yes, you're right, Sister Paula. And I just, you know, encourage you, Sister Paula, keep doing what you're doing. You know, you're always in my thoughts and prayers, Sister Paula.
Thank you.
I love you dearly. And you keep up the good work, Sister Paula. Elliot and Brother Richard, y'all, thanks for the time, man.
Thank you for your call, sir.
You're welcome. Thank you, Brother Joe.
You're welcome, Sister Paula.
Elliot, if I can, I'd like to ask Sister Paula another question.
All right, go ahead.
In relationship to, you know, and the reason I wanted to go back to show people that, you know, your history, that this is, you're not just somebody that just came up and dealing with an issue, you know, and you've been looking at the development of Philadelphia and its progression of really doing is due on black people. So the question I have is this. Out of your experience, where do you see the power levers for us that we have to go for? Our arms may be a little too short and we need somebody to lift this up. But where are the power levers that we have to? We've already got the city council. We already had a mayors. We already had state representatives. Where do you see that we need to be focused from a tactical perspective on out of your experience?
We need a bloodletting.
You ain't say that. Did you say that? Wait, hold on. Make sure I heard you. Go ahead.
Okay, and let me tell you how I'm using that word, since we're talking about politics.
We're talking about
representatives. And mm-hmm. when I say bloodletting, what I mean is those caucuses that those characters that have been on those various governmental levels, they've been there too long. They're complacent. and they need to be removed. That's what a political bloodletting is. Mm-hmm. It's time to bring in new, young, vibrant blood. That's why I won't run for political office anymore. I ran twice and did not win, not because I wasn't capable of winning. It was because they orchestrated and maneuvered the system to make certain that that didn't happen. The same with economic development. They had Chinatown, they have Korean town, et cetera. So, of course, I was trying to create African town, if you will, along Girard Avenue, since we were predominantly here. But, of course, the black folks, along with the Jewish developers, were not going to have it. That's a whole story for another time. But you could mention probably pretty much all aspects of life, and I'm able to respond to based on my 60 years in trying to transform and uplift black people, particularly in the city of Philadelphia.
Let's grab another call before we go back into the conversation. Let's go to 267. 267?
Yes, Brother Elliot.
Yeah, how are you, sir?
Good, sir. Brother Richard.
Yes, sir.
Yes, you have a fantastic guest here, and she's working hard in the community. I've always admired Miss Peoples. Miss Peoples, I want to take us back to 1976.
Good evening.
Ma'am, we say?
I say good evening.
Good evening to you, ma'am. It's okay. Mm-hmm. I want to take us back to 1976 and 1977, ma'am. I'm 56 years old. And that time period, ma'am, I was in high school, and there were two young ladies that I dated. One, I went to elementary school, who moved from South Philadelphia. I'm from South Philadelphia and West Philadelphia, to Yorktown. And there was another young lady who I dated in high school who lived in Yorktown. And that year in 1976 and 1977, I was always fascinated with that new development that Sullivan put together, his pennies, his money, his people, his church, their congregation, and did that development. And I can
Zion
remember,
Gardens, you're talking about Zion Gardens.
Exactly. And I can remember, man, leaving my home, and I just about got my license at 16, leaving my home and seeing these two young ladies. One was named Freda Whitener. I believe her family's still there. Another one, young lady by the name of Gina Williams. But in any event, it was a pleasure to see that black development in that community. Mm-hmm. And right around that time,
you still there? Sister Peoples? Let's take a brief, we're going to take a brief break here. Look like we had a little technical difficulty. I lost my call here. Let me queue up one of these commercials. We're going to take a brief break, and when we come back, hopefully we'll have everybody again with us. We're in conversation tonight with Sister Paula Peoples, founder and president and chief executive officer of the Renaissance Community Development Corporation, which owns and manages Renaissance Gardens, and also she's the chair of the National Action Network Pennsylvania chapter. We're going to take a brief break, and when we come back, hopefully we can get this matter straight. We'll be right back. Richard.
To the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts and live program scheduling, visit us on the web at blacktalkradionetwork.com.
Not a
All Insurance Incorporated, an African-American owned and operated insurance agency in business for over 20 years. Located at 231 Southeastern Road in Glenside, PA. Please with other offices in Germantown and West Philadelphia. Call now for commercial insurance quotes, homeowners insurance quotes, automobile insurance quotes, notary and tax services. Representing over 15 major A-rated insurance companies.
Brother Tim, hold on a second.
All notary services.
Yeah, hold on a second. Quote.
Call this number, 215-885-2444. That number is 215-885-2444. 215-885-2444. All Insurance Incorporated.
Before your roof becomes unruly, call Dooley. Dooley Brothers, specializing in shingle, rubber roofs, gutters, downspouts, and vinyl sidings. Call for your free estimate today. 215-224-3882. That's 215-224-3882. Dooley Brothers Roofing, the roofing experts you can trust. That number again, 215-224-3882. 215-224-3882. Before your roof becomes unruly, call Dooley.
Hey, did y'all see the stuff I posted on my wall?
Nah, it didn't even show up in my news feed.
Man, I'm done with social media. All the injustice and brutality going around, and it's like they're trying to suppress our voice. We're trying to get the message out there, and you can't even share empowerment and what's going on around the country either.
Mm-mm. Nah, don't be dumb with social media, though. It's a tool, and there is a place where we have a voice. It's a Let's Buy Black 365 social network. You do anything you would on any other social network. Post pictures, videos, status updates, share resources and community news. But on Let's Buy Black 365, it's a platform for us and by us to tell our messages.
Whoa, that's like a digital underground railroad.
What's the name of that site again?
It's letsbuyblack365.com. Yeah, I heard about that. It's all about networking, and you get points, right? Yeah, the more you network, post, and share, the more points you get. Plus, you get points for posting pictures, sharing information, attending community events, and inviting others to network with you on the app.
Wow, that's all I need to know. I'm gonna go download that app right now.
Now, better yet, let me invite you so I can get some points. It's all about empowerment and solutions, y'all.
Yeah, that's what's up. I'm all in.
Let's do it. Let's share our stories.
Let's buy Black365.com.
RG Electrical Inspections provides electrical inspections for realtors, licensed electricians, and homeowners. Licensed and insured underwriter, serving Philadelphia and surrounding area. Call today, 484-268-9837.
I come here tonight and plead with you. Believe in yourself and believe that you're somebody. As I said to the group last night, nobody else can do this for us. No document can do this for us. No Lincolnian Emancipation Proclamation can do this for us. No Kennisonian or Johnsonian Civil Rights Bill can do this for us. If the Negro is to be free, he must move down into the inner resources of his own soul and sign with the pen and ink of self-assertive manhood his own Emancipation Proclamation. Don't let anybody take your manhood. Be proud of our heritage. As somebody said earlier tonight, we don't have anything to be ashamed of. Somebody told a lie one day. They couched it in language. They made everything black, ugly, and evil. Look in your dictionary and see the synonyms of the word black. It's always something degrading and low and sinister. Look at the word white. It's always something pure, high, and clean. But I want to get the language right tonight. I want to get the language so right that everybody here will cry out, yes, I'm black, I'm proud of it, I'm black and beautiful.
Yeah.
Today, our people can see that we're faced with a government conspiracy. This government has failed us. The senators who are filibustering concerning your and my rights, that's the government. Don't say it, Southern senators. This is the government. This is a government filibuster. It's not a segregationist filibuster. It's a government filibuster. Any kind of activity that takes place on the floor of the Congress or the Senate, that's the government. So this government has failed us. The government itself has failed us. And the white liberals who have been posing as our friends have failed us. And once we see that all these other sources to which we've turned have failed, we stop turning to them and turn to ourselves. We need a self-help program, a do-it-yourself philosophy, a do-it-right-now philosophy. It's already too late philosophy. This is what you and I need to get with. And the only way we're going to solve our problem is with a self-help program. Before we can get a self-help program started, we have to have a self-help philosophy. Black nationalism is a self-help philosophy. What's so good about it? You can stay right in the church where you are and still take black nationalism as your philosophy.
Welcome back to Time for an Awakening, and we're joined in conversation this evening with Chair of the National Action Network, PA Chapter. Sister Paula Peoples is with us. We had a little technical difficulties. I think everybody is back with us. Richard?
Yes, I'm here.
Okay. All right. Sister Peoples?
I'm back, Brother
okay.
Elliot.
I'm sorry about that. And the caller?
I'm here, sir.
Okay.
I'm here.
Go ahead. Finish your comments. I'm sorry.
So no problem. So during those time periods, my mom had been teaching ever since I was in high school. And Leon Williams and Lorraine Hanna, my mother, would talk about the racism of the professors in that university. And I had a talk with them about it. And they said, whatever you do, my mom, this was part of my mom's position, she said, whatever you do, be like my cousins and your relatives and either go to a Cheney, Adele's Peak, or Florida. And at that time, a guy down the street who was older than me, who I admire, who used to be Jerome Artis' sparring partner, he was going to Lincoln. So that's one of the reasons why I went to Lincoln University. I'm sorry. Listen, let me tell you something. So to all the people, I go away. I never forget this. Go away to school, finish, do what I have to do. And I took a few graduate courses at Temple, and I transferred the courses from Temple to Beaver, which is now Arcadia. But my point is that I remember a time when you talked about your town, the people who resided in there. You talked about Revolution Leon Sullivan. You talked about Bright Hope. All of a sudden, it's this big Temple town that's overshadowing everything that your town was to us and what it did. And a friend of mine also had his problems there, Curtis Thomas, who graduated from there. And eventually went to Antioch Law School, which eventually became UDC, District of Columbia Law School. But my point is that what was going on in the inside of Temple University spread to the outside of Temple University. The blacks that they put in basically never graduated. It got the money, and if you graduated, you did it successfully, it's fine. But it didn't have – it had a very poor black passing rate with degrees. Now my point is that I want that to come back, like what's going on in South Philly to come back, and what's going on in West Philly to come back, and all the other in Mount areas, places like that, they're not up in there like that. They want the best part of the cities, what we once had. I want what was called Leavenworth Ross, which is not the same, or 25th and Diamond, which is not the same. We missed those people because they were a community. I'm with Elliot. Now, here's the interesting thing. At that time in 78 and 79, I married two people. One of them became very different, and one still just progressive. It was John Street and Milton. I thought Milton and John were right on the money at that time in high school. I said, these guys right here fighting for the people. Seems like to me, John Street became another person. Milton became who he always was, and he's okay as progressivist. But I heard you talk about the politician. So at this point, We have to see who our open enemy is. He looks like us. He and she looks like us. That's another thing. We have to analyze who's in our community, what we're going to do about it, how they're going to be removed, how we're going to put somebody in there, and how do we go forward. Now, I tell you, another situation, since you said you were
Yeah, but it's you have a question?
One more thing. Say, Elliot, my uncle married Regina's Jennings' sister-in-law. Were y'all in the Panther Party together?
Who's her sister-in-law?
Dr. Regina Jennings.
No, I know that name, but we don't know her. I've talked to other sisters. I was in the party a long time. I was in there for 5 years. I don't know Regina Jennings. I know
but she's up here with the California.
I've heard some.
No problem. But I'm going to let you go. I want to hear how should we go about getting our people in the right places, getting our communities back, economically, politically, and socially, and our schools back, and how do we do it, when do we do it, and how? And give me the blueprint on how you think we should do it.
Thank you for your call, Tim.
Indeed.
Sister Peoples, we talked earlier about the situation with the jobless rate among young black males 20 to 34 in the city of Philadelphia, which is basically a state of black emergency here in our community. And you mentioned about the poverty rate, which is the highest among major cities in this country at is over 28%.
That's right. It's nearing 30, yeah.
Yes.
Sounding an alarm beside us.
I know it. But let me say this, because this is my opinion. I want to bounce it off you, being that you've been an activist in this city for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we see projects booming all around this city. And you can walk in neighborhoods, you can walk in Center City, and you don't see us working by and large. You might walk across a construction site and see a few black laborers.
Mm-hmm.
But in the skilled positions, you barely see black. And if you walk in the neighborhoods and see construction going on, if it's not white guys doing it, then they've employed people from Mexico or other
ethnic groups.
Mm-hmm. I think, in my opinion, it's coming a time, and the time is now, where direct action has to be taken in our community. And it's going to take rallying of our people, and especially our young people, because in some of these communities, there's still a lot of foolishness going on. Gunplay among some ignorant folks, whether they be young or old. This type of stuff needs to stop, because we do have an enemy. And if those people had jobs or means where they could start a business, then you wouldn't see a lot of this foolishness going on. You wouldn't see a lot of drug selling and territories and fighting over this and that and making it unsafe for seniors and babies to play in the street or walk in the community. I think it's time that direct action needs to be taken on these construction sites. If it's building going on in black neighborhoods and our people don't see none of their babies working, then it's time for especially some of these young people that's standing around on the corner with guidance of older folks to go and shut these construction sites down. I really believe that it's, the times of negotiating and being passive, I think it's went by the boards. You know, we can look back at our situation here in this country and see some of the things that our ancestors did, and we can look at, because everything is not positive, we can look at the mistakes and the successes and the failures. But right now, the negotiation when our people seems to negotiate, and especially the people that we've put in positions to negotiate with these folks, it seems as though the negotiator, which is the black person, might get enriched, but the community always ends up with the short end of the stick. I think it's time that direct action needs to be taken on a lot of these construction sites, especially on sites that's already undergoing that the community didn't stop. What's your opinion on that, Ms. Weaver?
Brother Elliot, I absolutely agree with you on that. When you talk about the negotiations, that's often where we're sold out, because the community, no matter how pure the intent, because usually we're going to look among ourselves, as we should, for that person or persons to go and negotiate with the enemy. The enemy knows that, usually, of course, know our background, so they know who's unemployed, who's been unemployed for 5 years, who just got out of prison, et cetera, et cetera. So what they're going to play to is the hunger, the need of that person or person. And as a result of that, they're able to co-opt that person to sell out their own people. That's why even recently we learned of one of the civic leaders took $25,000 from a mayor to support the beverage tax. To go for kindergarten and preschool education, and once that was approved, by the way, I'm not a supporter of Michael Nutter, but he attempted the same thing, and you would thought hell was going to freeze over when he attempted to do it. However, the great white hope mayor, Jim Kenney, comes in, oh, and it's all right, and it's even so all right, I'm able to pay a civic leader of one of the oldest 106-year-old civic organization to be able to be out there lobbying on my behalf, on our behalf, for the sugar tax. Just as an example, this is what we go through in the community. This is what we will have to strategize as we look at who we send to the table to represent us in the negotiations. I've worked with the minority contractors, trying to work with those brothers, only to learn again there was a black person that the city put over commerce in dealing with the contracts and issuing out certain provisions that would enable them as minorities to participate, only to be left out every time. So that's what I was saying earlier, Brother Ellie. Regardless of where we find ourselves on what level of struggle, that's exactly where we're going to meet a challenge. What we have to examine as we begin to transition into the next 10, 15, 20, 30 years, because they have already planned out, as you so eloquently indicated, 2035 and beyond. We're talking about trying to catch up just so our people will be able to survive. But we're going to have to, in my opinion, create principles by which people are governed. Very similar, not exactly to that of tires that was utilized in South Africa during the struggle. And I can talk about the Cuban struggle, the struggle of Bolivia, et cetera, et cetera. There always have to be some level of result as discipline that will be applied as a result of you betraying your people.
I agree.
What's absent in our community right now. They don't have
any fear.
Certain communities,
exactly.
They do. Certain communities they do, because they know if they try to come here and build something and we haven't approved it, I already made it real clear, we're going to lay our bodies down. Who and what company you going to bring over here to build something we have not approved? We've already been bamboozled one time, and that's all that we needed. And that was by Shirley Kitchen with the University Village Apartments at 10th and Cecil B. Moore. Blatantly lied. But that was one time. You only get to do us once. So nobody else is going to get us over here on this side of Broad Street. And I'm saying that has to be the attitude that we adopt throughout the city, not just here in North Philadelphia.
we have to adopt that attitude that we will not allow you to betray us. We're going to expose you. And as a result of that, we're going to cast you out of our community, whether you're from Philadelphia, Chicago, or wherever you're from. We're not going to allow you to do that because you have the survival of our very race in your possession. That's the kind of leadership and responsibility that we're giving to you. Because damn right, Black Lives Matter. If they matter, our Black Lives Matter for the future, for the present and the future.
Well,
so what I'm saying, Brother Elliot, we need to shut down construction sites. Unfortunately, and it's really unfortunate that in 2017, the only language, the only music they will hear, and when I say they, I'm talking about the majority that controls the commerce of this city, is when we take bold stance where we have to shut them down. Where the truck tags from Maryland, from New Jersey, et cetera, that are pulled up on sites in our community and working, and we're not working, then where our position has to be, like most unions, when they shut down a site, then nobody works. It has to be the people's union that way. We show up and say, okay, we're not working. I don't see Jamal, who lives over there at the corner, or little Jeffrey over there. He's 18. None of them are working. Okay, guess what? No one works today. And you can't work if it's our community. If you truly believe in empowerment of your community, if you truly believe that all power belongs to the people, then you're going to stand boldly and say, no, you're not building here today. I don't see anybody on that site that I know that look like us. Therefore, you can't build. I don't care if you paid for the land. I don't care if you got a permit. No, the ultimate permit you need is from the indigenous people that live in that community. White folks don't let you come in their community and do whatever you want, and we need to stop them from doing that in our community. You see what the Asians did? They didn't let them build that baseball stadium down there in north of Vine Street. So why do we have to settle? No, we have to wake our folks up. We have to encourage them and let them know the will is with us. It's with us. Like I said, be encouraged with courage. Be bold. Be willing to have the audacity to tell them, no, you will not build. Well, that's what we're doing. Telling Temple, having audacity, you will not remove our homes. We will not be removed. You will not build a stadium here. We don't care how many times you change your presidents over there at Temple. You're not going to build here. You've already done it twice. You will not burn us again the way my mother used to say. Shame on the dog that bites you the first time, but shame on you that allowed him to bite you, and you already know that he has teeth.
You know, Sister People, that, you know, it was two things that if y'all don't mind, I wanted to raise. One, and it goes to which. What you were speaking as far as the action that you're involved in. And the question that come to my mind is, what other kind of support do you need in relationship to? And I know you're being successful, but is there other things that we in the community and as examples for other people in other communities, you would need in order to continue to really like knock out this whole thing about Temple and this stadium? What other kind of tools or weapons you need in order to make this a no more action?
We need people to write to Temple, to write editorials in the newspaper. Don't just have it coming from just us, the activists. If you are with us, make it publicly known that you are with us. When you can, come to the meetings over at the Stadium Stompers meeting over at the Church of the Advocate. When the rallies are convened on Temple's campus or on board and Cecil B. Moore against the stadium, be there with us. Support. At least support and show your support in any way you can. And I know we're talking about primarily Temple tonight, but I know people have contacted me about St. Joe's, about LaSalle. You know, these struggles are continuing where Black people primarily reside, that they're trying to push us out of our communities and out of our homes. West Philadelphia. You know, like I said, nothing happens by accident. Just think about how they moved the juvenile center up there in West Philadelphia. They removed the museum from the campus of Lincoln to Center City. All of this is by design, all of it. And so we are focusing on Temple tonight, but I want everyone that's within the sound of our voices to hear our appeal to you. We have to stand up no matter where we live. Don't listen to my voice and say, oh, man, they over there fighting in North Philadelphia. No, you need to be fighting as soon as you step out of your door, because they come for me today. They'll be there for you tomorrow.
They're already there, so it's a matter of because all we're doing is, like, when the flies come, we keep fanning instead of trying to get the something to where we can keep the flies away.
The first example for us was South Philadelphia, Brother Elliot.
Yes,
when they took South Street, the famous South Street, that was the first example.
Model cities.
Yep,
that's right.
And then what
Jim
I want to
Lester,
do,
may he rest in peace, the late Jim Lester.
Yes. I wanted to raise a concern and at the same time project out, you know, from you. I went to a meeting in North Philadelphia not too long ago, and they were talking about, and it was also another meeting that was hosted in relationship to classifying children as being trauma victims. So one, I wanted to know, is that true? And looking at North Philadelphia, particularly that was that the question about children are living under trauma because of the effects that Elliot you was raising, and therefore that's affecting their educational outcome. Sister People, have you heard that as a means of dealing with public health in North Philadelphia?
No, I have not heard that terminology in regards to our children. No, I have not. They're very selective about what they use in relationship to demean us. When we talked about some time ago about black men being endangered species, you noticed they didn't adopt it.
Right.
That means they would have to open up the prison gates.
Right. And that's why I wanted to ask to get clarity, you know, whether I was just misunderstood or in that. But the thing that I wanted from a proactive perspective, I'm looking at, and something that you said in dealing with this, and that was building people. I mean, we have to build. So I'm wondering if would you agree that if we start looking at, and I'm always looking at from K to 12 is 12 years.
Yeah. You know,
if we started really capturing the public educational institutions and actually really made them to become effective, so that we're grooming and developing, I mean, through them, those institutions. Do you think that that's a feasible tactical plan?
Oh, absolutely, I do. I have a 13-year-old grandson, and I constantly educate him about his surroundings. He happens to go to a very good charter school, a Veronica Jordan's charter school. But despite that, I educate him about the world because he's a black male child. I clarify for him when he gets information that is not true from school or otherwise, because the teacher happened to be your parent. And so I have to make certain that he has clarification on what he or she is telling him not to be true, and to give him what the facts and truth actually is based on what we perhaps were talking about at that time. I think it's very critical that we grab that generation. They're like a sponge. We have to grab them, because drugs, we lost the generation or a portion of the generation. I hate to think of the full generation, but at least a portion of them based on the drugs that were poured into our community by the government. Then the selling of drugs that were brought into our community. I saw a cartoon, I believe it was today, where it showed two type of treatments for drugs. And they had a prison, and inside the prison was all black faces, black bodies. And then the other was a building, an institution. It was white folks, and it was treatment for opioids addiction. So it was a clear delineation in the sense that the blacks go to jail and the whites go and get treatment from the government.
And because education now by the government is being pushed down to preschool, and I think that's one of the things with the sugar tax was supposed right. to assist. And if we keep this healthy skepticism that anything the government do is not in our best interest, then it becomes like imperative, because now they're talking about, if you're talking about preschool, they're going to these here centers and they're like 6 months old in some cases because parent, you know, has to work, or a year old. So that becomes another layer that we have to grab for this development. And my last point, you know, wanted to see.
And we, not to cut you off, but we got to yes. grab them by being involved, by being
right, exactly.
an advisory yes. board. If you don't have an advisory board, you have to be on the advisory board. You have to create one
yep.
so that you can oversee what the children are being taught.
Yes.
Because, mm-hmm. again, it's still our tax dollars.
And and I'm glad you raised that, because that's one of those tactical tools, instruments that we can be able to tell people. All you got to do, what is a advisory board meeting, might be an hour, 2 hours, 3 hours.
That's right.
Even if you ain't into it, just go. Because the example you gave with Brother Charlie Browser, by him being there, he got information that he could be yeah. able to bring back. But in mm-hmm. most cases, we're not there. You know,
that's right. That's
and
right.
because we're not there, somebody else is coming up and creating plans and strategies. So,
Somebody else is directing the thoughts.
Right.
In the thinking, cognitive thinking process of our children. And
right.
see what, and so what I say to parents, because I used to be a preschool teacher a long time ago. And so what I used to say, what I would say to parents, you won't let anyone just babysit your child. You want to do some background check on them. You want to know who this guy is or who this female is that's going to be watching your child from anywhere from 6 to 8 hours, where it's no difference when it comes to educational institutions. It's the same thing. You want to know, what are you going to be? What's the curriculum for teaching my child at 1 year old, 2 years old, et cetera, et cetera? How do you know that person that's in there teaching don't dislike black children? You know what I'm saying? So, yes, we have to be on top of every aspect of our family, of our life. We have to take a holistic approach when it comes to black families. And it's nothing against anybody else, but you always believe, and we were always taught, you got to deal with self first. Then you can extend yourself and collaborate with other people and other races and other ethnicities. But we got to take care of home first.
Yeah.
And right now, our home is damn near in total shambles. So we need to take care of our own.
Yeah, Sister Peoples, you know, before I let you go, a couple of things I want to touch on with you. Because you mentioned earlier, and me and Richard talk about this a lot on the program, about making black politicians pay some type of penalty
mm-hmm.
for their actions of betraying the community. The actions that was done by Brother Asa Khalif and Brother Ikey, Black Lives Matter, and confronting that video that went viral of him confronting Darryl Clark I think that was City Council and City Hall. Those actions, and he mentioned, because he was on the program, he mentioned that they had wrote letters to every city councilman about the murder of David Jones, and something needed to be done about the officer needed to be charged for his murder, for shooting him in the back, because it's the second time he shot a black person in the back. It just so happens that the first brother didn't die, but he's a quadriplegic. He's in a wheelchair.
Yeah, I know. That's Brother Carl.
Yes.
His last name. Oh, yes. Mm-hmm.
And he said that none of them acknowledged his letters, so he was forced to do to take direct action to what he did when he went in there and disrupted those sessions, and then went to
That's
another
right.
politician. So what I'm saying is, I think when our people start developing a mindset where we need to start doing this, because I know that shook up black politicians. They seen it. They seen what was done. I think they're keeping their fingers crossed, hoping this type of mindset don't spread among our people. But It needs to be.
It's already there. It just needs to be watered.
I agree. It needs to be some type of penalties paid by these politicians that turn the community in. People get in there under the pretense that they're going to stop and frisk. The one guy went in there. He started taking money, getting roofs on his house. Now he's getting ready to be sentenced next week, the former district attorney.
Seth Williams.
Yes. Mm-hmm. You had councilmen in there that was dirty. It's I don't know what. State representatives taking money. One of them had been playing gospel in this city for 40, 50 years. All of a sudden, she had Alzheimer's. That's why she was taking money. And then now here's a respected a black religious leader, Rodney Muhammad, on a white mayor's payroll as an advisor. Now, I'm quite sure he's not politically advising him. Of course, they don't use no blacks necessarily to advise him politically. So what is he advising them on, how to be a good Muslim?
It is political. What they have alleged
okay.
is political because it was dealing with public policy around a tax, a beverage tax. And what we say is this, Rodney Carpenter Muhammad, because we didn't even know his last slave name. We didn't know his name. Mm. When the white reporter did the story, that's how we found out Rodney's name. I always only knew him by a brother, Minister Rodney Muhammad. In any event, we're saying if you're going to do that and you don't want to deal with criticism or exposure from the community who know you in one capacity, then you should just come clean and say, I'm taking a contract. You know, don't get salty with the activists or with the people in the community when we say, oh, you did that, but you hit it. You hit your hand. And see, this is not my first time having to deal with a situation like this with Minister Rodney. I went through this with him just about a year and a half ago. Nan did, dealing with Cordish in the casino in South Philadelphia, if you remember. We brought the black people from Kentucky that were being discriminated against, et cetera. So, like I said in opening the show, I speak truth to power. I don't care who you are. And I'm saying, I understand people want to eat. You got to eat. You need an income. Well, if you're going to do that, and you have been so blessed to be a leader of a civil rights organization or even a block captain, then you need to let people know what you're about to do. Don't let people find out based on some private investigation into finding out where the money, following the money, and then we discover that someone from our beloved community has actually been selling us out. Shame, shame, shame. That's what I will say. And yes, we got to call them out, but we have to also find people in the community, preferably young people, that we could nurture and provide them with that leadership and get
to
that
run
commitment
for these seats.
From
exactly.
them to be a part of us.
Yeah, you're right.
And a part of our movement. Something that we used to do some years ago was called a report card. We do a report card on these jokers. So when they get ready to run for city council, et cetera, we pull that report card out. So you don't have to remember what they did 3 years ago because now they're in the fourth year and they got to run. You bring that all out. You say, oh, no, Jim Kenney, you told us you was going to get rid of stop and frisk. And then when you got in, you flipped the script on us. Well, we're going to flip the script on you. We're not supporting you for mayor. That's what we have to do.
Wow. You know, before we wind things down, sister people, let me do a little reflections with you, because my neighborhood down there where I grew up, around the 20th and Fitzwater, 20th and Catherine area of South Philadelphia, right around there where Marian Anderson's block, that neighborhood now, all of the people that I grew up with and knew in that neighborhood is gone.
Yes, they are.
Now, the churches that was in that area, a lot of them historic buildings, are no longer there anymore. Now, a couple of them, the historic edifices, evidently they bought the church out because they turned them into condos, but they're still using the superstructure that the church was in.
Because the Catholic church is still there, right?
Yes, that's one of the ones they made a condo out of.
Wow.
The belt, that one that had the bell tower right at the end of Bainbridge.
Mm-hmm. Now, along 20th Street.
Yes. Now, Marian Anderson Church is still there. Okay. That's probably the only one, major one, that's still in that area of South Philadelphia. The rest of the, wow, lot of the other buildings have been basically co-opted or brought out. Now, the old historic Y that was on Christian Street, when whites started moving into that neighborhood, they wanted to make that Y a private club. Now, that had been a black historic Y for maybe since the 1920s or earlier. They wanted to make that a private club. The neighbors did fight it, and it's still a open Y. But if you go around it now, they basically control the board. I mean, it's what they're doing to the Marian Anderson Rec Center.
I'm listening to you because, you know, last year we had to fight them here at 10th and Oxford because they came in. It was trying to make the Marie Dendy, which took us 10 years to change that playground to Marie Dendy Recreation Center from Ed Swartz Recreation. It used to be called Swartz Recreation Center at 10th and Oxford. And they came in, this arrogant white man from out there in Montgomery County, Delaware County, I can't remember now. And he was nasty, but he had to deal with me. And so they were not able to successfully turn that recreation center into a private club. He wanted to do the same thing here, right here in North Philadelphia. So that's why I said nothing is by accident, Brother Elliot. But we were able to be successful there, too. We said, no, you're not turning anything. This center is here for our children, this recreation center. We worked it. We tolerated. We built it up. We even want more a growth to the building. We were able to get Daryl Clark down here to make certain that we got improvement on the inner part of the recreation center. But that was after we defeated apartheid efforts to take over our recreation center here, our children's playground here in North Philadelphia on the east side. So I hear what you're saying. Other areas have not been so successful because they didn't come out and fight. I know some recreation center where the gentrifiers have come in and basically taken them over. You're not allowed to go in them.
And they're organized. It's so interesting to see how they're organizing because, I mean, I think even next week they're having, and they've been having for the last so many years, where they're even – we're talking about developing committee people, developing people to be ward leaders. I mean, they're not there yet, but they're having these here sessions and parties and bringing and networking events so that they could be able to truly take over these communities. So
I think,
you know, what we are saying is and saying to us, not just here, because I hear in Atlanta, the challenge is there. Chicago, Detroit, we've heard from St. Louis. These are the same tactics and strategies that they're using, but the same appeal that we're asking for, whether they Xers or Malalians or whatever, that why can't we see a vision where you see, as you, I think you mentioned, Sister Peoples, being pioneers and being able to come into our community and with your skills and with your ability, with your motivation, and actually be a part of developing compared to being afraid. Because the general media creates a fear, and it's interesting how white people can be able, and I'm not one to use this language, but white people could be afraid of black people, but you can see them moving into black communities that they would say, you know, all this gun violence, all of this stealing, all of this, but they buying up these places and they sitting it. They'll walk and walk with them dogs. Don't get me started.
No, they do walk with the dogs. No, I totally agree with you. No, you're right. But because unfortunately too many of us still think that the white man's ice is colder, and therefore as they move into our community, we have arrived because they are here now. Mm. I've heard people say that backward. Ooh, don't get me started. No. Okay?
It's real. I mean, it's real. And I mean, and you know, it's just something. So that's why we have to have these dialogues, and I know
I and I know Elliot really appreciate the work and effort, and I'm glad Elliot reached out to you, because it's really necessary to see warriors who are in our community recognized and been there. Because I've, you know, over the years seen, as Brother Joe have, what you've been doing. I've also over the years with Dave Richardson, when they had, the E&A convention, we almost had it, the strategic plan. And it was, as you said, these political entities, these new, and what we're looking at now is new political entities, self-serving political entities. But they're not just the political entities, because if we go down to the ward leader, we go down to the committee person, everybody's getting something from maintaining our community the way they are.
And that's why many of them, as I said earlier, bloodletting, many of them, we just need a clean sweep. Mm-hmm. We really do. And what people, if they adopt the attitude that so many of us that are progressive and understand what's going on have adopted, that it's not personal.
Right.
But it's for the preservation of our people. And that's first and foremost. That's why I'll tell them in a minute, it's not personal with you. I don't really know you. I just only know the negative impact that you're having on my community, on my people. Only know that your efforts that may have begun 30 years ago are not the same. And therefore, you should remove yourself in dignity, lest we push you out. That has to be the rallying cry throughout the city. They have to go. So many times progressive people run, and because they don't have the money or don't know how to mount a people's campaign, they don't get elected.
Right.
They need to go. Constantly we hear about stuff. Look at Bob Brady. You don't hear nobody saying nothing about Bob Brady and what's alleged with him.
I know.
What, you know, with him, with the judge and all of that. Come on. Really?
I know.
Or the
and got a black minister. Got a black minister from out there in Ardmore to funnel the money.
Yes.
Wow.
But see, all that needs to be on paper, on a computer, Instagram, Twitter, however, so that people, however they communicate, they will get that information. They'll get that tape. They'll get that 140 characters, so that everybody is aware of this person. And therefore, there's no welcome mat for him or she in our community. You fell from grace.
Wow. Sister Peoples, I want to thank you for being with us this evening.
Thank you for having
and,
me.
And now that you got my number, the program is always at your access whenever you want to let the people know what's going on. Mm-hmm. You got a voice. We're on Friday nights. We're on Sundays. So you can always call, give us the information, or be on yourself.
I'll be happy to do that. And thank you for allowing our people to have the opportunity to hear this healthy dialogue. They don't hear this enough. This is such an important program. It was a great program this evening. I wish that it could be on earlier in the day so that we could educate even more. Because I know the seniors go to bed early, and so they're not listening as they would at the drive time, for example. But we're gonna thank the Creator for you and for this program, for Brother Rich. We're gonna accept what has been provided to us as a blessing and just build on it. Build on it. And I will tell our people, stay woke, folks. Be engaged. Stand up encouraged. Be unafraid to speak out and let them know that we are aware of who you are, and we're going to plan to stop you. No more traitors. No more. No more.
Sister Peoples, thanks for being with us. We'll talk to you
soon. Thank you. Stay well.
All right.
Peace.
Bye-bye.
We'll be right back.
Listening to Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts or live programming, hit them up at timeforanawakening.com.
Not a Wu-Tang-a.
All Insurance Incorporated, an African-American owned and operated insurance agency in business for over 20 years, located at 231 Southeastern Road in Glenside, PA, with other offices in Germantown and West Philadelphia. Call now for commercial insurance quotes, homeowners insurance quotes, automobile insurance quotes, notary and tax services, representing over 15 major A-rated insurance companies, offering a discount on all notary services when you call in for a free quote. Call this number, 215-885-2444. That number is 215-885-2444. 215-885-2444. All Insurance Incorporated.
Before your roof becomes unruly, call Dooley. Dooley Brothers, specializing in shingle, rubber roofs, gutters, downspouts, and vinyl sidings. Call for your free estimate today. 215-224-3882. That's 215-224-3882. Dooley Brothers Roofing, the roofing experts you can trust. That number again, 215-224-3882. 215-224-3882. Before your roof becomes unruly, call Dooley.
RG Electrical Inspections provides electrical inspections for realtors, licensed electricians, and homeowners. Licensed and insured underwriter, serving Philadelphia and surrounding area. Call today, 484-268-9837.
Overworked? Suffering with an underperforming company, headache customer, staff, or vendors? Or are you a startup who wants to get it right the first time and avoid the costly mistakes? We turned a $24,000 a year odd job handyman service into a seven-figure high-end custom home builder and commercial contractor licensed and operating in three states. This is just one transformation created for entrepreneurs like you in various industries around the country. Not what you're used to from accounting and business consulting? Well, welcome to New Business Solutions. If you're ready to go beyond advising, coaching, and training and get implemented results, call 301-244-9072. Let New Business Solutions apply the best comprehensive administrative, accounting, operations, human resources, management, sales, and marketing to help you actualize your vision for yourself and your company. From anywhere nationally, call 301-244-9072. Spelled new as in numerous on your device right now. Book your free consultation at newbusinesssolutions.com.
Strange Fruit, you know, to me is my favorite. And I think Strange Fruit deals with things and deals with America, shall we say.
Deals with my people and our oppression.
I don't quite understand.
Yeah, the same thing as you. I mean the same as you. You're right. It deals with America and the black and white problem, really.
7 feet. Barren, strange fruit. Blood on the leaves. And blood at the root. Black bodies swinging in the southern breeze. Strange fruit hanging from the poplar trees. Pastoral scene. Of the gallant South, them big bulging eyes and the twisted mouth, scent of magnolia, clean and fresh. Then the sudden smell of burning flesh.
It deals with America and the black and white problem, really. The ugliness of it. That is about the ugliest song I have ever heard. ever heard. Ugly in the sense that it is violent and tears at the guts of what white people have done to my people in this country. I mean, it really, really opens up the wound completely well when you think of a man hanging from a tree and to call him strange fruit.
Welcome back to Time for an Awakening, and I want to thank our guest that was with us this evening, Chair of the National Action Network, PA Chapter, and founder of Renaissance Community Development Corporation, Sister Paula Peoples, was with us. Richard, interesting conversation with Sister Paula and her activism that she's been doing in this city for decades now. You can still see it's no rest for the weary, so to speak.
Yeah.
No shortage of the needs of people like Sister Peoples to be out here to rally the community. I hope that we're able to cultivate, maybe just from the reach of this program, other younger people that are interested in really being involved in changing the dynamic of our communities. Because if we just stand and let these people, listen, a lot of these people believe that you're not going to do anything about it. Mm-hmm. And I'm talking about the Europeans that are pushing this. Mm-hmm. And they easily figure that they can co-opt blacks to do their bidding. And that's sad, because there's not too many, and I don't know of any other nationality that'll quickly sell out their own, like some of these black, especially the elected officials. So I do agree with her, and we've talked about it in our program, that we got to come up with ways that these people have to pay a penalty for what they've done and what they continue to do. You know, she raised what has been going on recently here in Philadelphia, centered around Minister Rodney Muhammad and his activities. He wasn't alone in that. The news that had just hit about him being on Jim Kenney's payroll. But the other thing about that casino down there in South Philly, he wasn't the only one. That Kenyatta Johnson was down there pushing the same thing. Even though that casino management group had a history of racial discrimination.
Mm-hmm. I just can't. I mean, I understand the power dynamics. And then again, I don't. You know what I mean? Like, theoretically and conceptually, I mean, you know, we know the history, right? I mean, and we know the social science, we know the political science, and we understand how the power dynamics is. But when we start to look at these individuals, I can't get to what makes that person make that final decision.
Say that final decision, the final decision to betray the community. I mean,
to actually do something that really, in the end, it sells out the black community. That's the way to do something where you don't assist the community itself to be able to see a vision to where they cannot. I mean, because these public people, whether they're in social service agencies or in political office, the best they can do, you know, is be able to project what is it we can do. But when all they do is be quiet and take what they can get for themselves, I can't understand how that happens. You know, I don't understand what's in the makeup of that person. Is it purely personal survival? I mean, and as Sister People said, well, like, if like we all got to get paid. If that's the case, then no, like just put it out there. Look, this is what I got to do. But
listen, and you know it was something in and around that, because just like she said, you know, it was a false name. She wasn't the only one that didn't know that his name was Carpenter, if that's his name. I don't know.
Right.
But, you know, this type of stuff, where does it end? That's one reason why I played that clip last week when this stuff, this so-called government document was leaked about them starting back up COINTELPRO.
Mm-hmm.
Not that it ever ended. But that's why I played that clip last week of Gil Noble. He interviewed a spy that had infiltrated several black groups. And he wanted to understand his same. He was basically asking the same question you're asking. What was your motivation to do what you did?
Mm-hmm.
And the guy really couldn't give him an answer. He did tell him that he couldn't live with himself now. And he said the reason he couldn't is because his actions caused the demise of groups and individuals. Now, you know, he wants to clean it up for himself, but that demise part, you know, that was the death of not only groups, but individuals.
Mm-hmm.
And he admitted that his actions directly attributed to that.
Mm-hmm.
But he really didn't give the man solid answers to why he did it. Although it's indications, because he kept talking about, you know, my envelopes and, you know, I had to sign for these envelopes and count the money. It was money.
Mm-hmm. A value that is or European value that even they, you know, Elliot, the difference between other ethnic groups in the world and us, especially us in the diaspora, but specifically us in America, is that no one else has been, when you talk about that strange fruit, no one else has been totally stripped of their social technology, of their relationship that will protect themselves than as we have in this country specifically. And so the value is seen that we, you know, a large portion have taken on, and I guess I continue to say that, is this value of white supremacy and its anti-black relationship. It's anti doing things that works out for the best interest of black people.
Yeah, well, listen, Richard, I agree with Sister Peoples that when she mentioned about it, and Philadelphia is no different than a lot of these other major cities that's been being taken over and rapidly gentrified, that you still have people in all of these cities that want to fight. And I just don't want to lay down and take it. But, you know, it's ways to fight. And it's different ways. We discussed different direct actions.
Mm-hmm.
She clearly believed they're going to have to be taken. But she also talked about different political actions. And that goes directly to what Brother Malik Zulu Shabazz was talking about last week, about fighting on all fronts.
Mm-hmm.
So when you're talking about, because, listen, I was in that bag at one time, and I don't want to say bag. I was in that mindset at one time where I didn't, man, this political stuff is dirty. I don't want to be a part of it at all. I want to have nothing to do with it. But I realized that it's a tool that can be utilized if you get conscious people in there that want to help their people. Because you can divert some of these monies that's in these cities directly to help your communities. When she talked about mounting people's campaign, that's what we talked about when we talked in private conversation, Richard.
Mm-hmm.
That some
mm-hmm.
of these council seats and representative seats that you don't see some of these seats that you see guys advertising on television, that takes major dollars. But you don't see a lot of these council seats and state representative advertising on the television because it don't take that much. And when I say that much, it basically takes a lot of street force.
Mm-hmm. But and that's why I see when you even to go that more economically feasible, when you talk about, and I don't know in other cities, but when you talk about those committees and wards, because they shape those more publicly projected, advertised positions, because as you said, they're the street people.
Yeah, but a lot of these, especially in this city here, a lot of these old ward leaders and all is just as dirty as the right. politicians they represent. But some of these young people, they already have street teams and street forces. They can utilize those same type of mechanisms that they're using sometimes in negativity to run for some of these seats and get in there and do right by the community. But let them know that the community is watching them.
Right.
That you got to get in there and start doing what the community needs. I see this some of this information that Mr. Hanford Jones shared when he was on the program a couple months ago about this rebuild, $500 million
yeah.
that the city's doing that was passed by City Council 16-1 to rebuild all these rec centers and libraries. Now, listen here. I lived in Philadelphia, and Philadelphia is no different than other cities. You go in white neighborhoods, their rec centers don't need to be rebuilt. Or their libraries. They're nice. Listen, I played basketball, league ball all over the city and outside the city. I've been to a lot of these white centers. Their rec centers is beautiful. Locker rooms and all. You can go in there, use the bathroom, showers and everything. You go in some of these black centers, you can't, a bathroom. You can't use the bathroom.
Ain't got no lights.
It was not only the lights, the toilets is all stopped up. Ain't no paper in there. It's filthy. And a lot of the bathrooms just flat out closed. Showers, that's out of the question. I mean, the rec centers is deplorable. That's in the black areas. The reason this Kenny now is pushing this rebuild of these rec centers and libraries, because a lot of these traditional neighborhoods, black neighborhoods, is being gentrified now.
There you go.
So when they're being gentrified, it's necessary to straighten out all the libraries and rec centers because their children and their people are going to be utilizing them. So all of a sudden, here comes some money also to be poured in to revitalize these rec centers and libraries. The other idiot, the black guy that was mayor, he closed libraries in black communities, if you remember.
Right. Got somebody from New York.
Or had limited hours where they wasn't even open. Like our children didn't need to read books. Some of these people, man, they're charlatans. They're worse than charlatans.
Only thing I'll say, Elliot, and you know, as and before the, there's two elements that I think that we should, as we're telling young people or other people to get in, that they should be involved in, or at least what I would project. They need to, you know, I call it study groups. They need to really study the history of the places they're from, because, you know, the reason why I thought it was important for Sister People to bring out that she was independent, that's 50 years that she's been, you know, and she said she was there, you know, from 15.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? So people understand that when we see people like her and others, there's a history that they have in relationship to how to navigate not just our conflict internally, but the external opposition. So, you know, the study groups is important for members before they get in a position, so they understand the history of why and what they're supposed to do when they get there.
Yeah, exactly.
in those machines. The other thing, which I think is even just as critical, I'm a firm believer that individuals who want to, even if young or old, that want to join, that they don't get to say as an individual, I want to run for this seat. You get selected because you go with an agenda. You don't just go there to and then find out. We already know that it's corruptible. So we're watching you, selecting you, and we're deciding on what we need from you, and as you go for that place, that position, and then we'll support you. And when we see that you're not, you know, as Sister People says, whether it be by scorecard or just by what have you done? Then you know you ain't going to be there next time. So we have to have that. And that's what I would, if I'm articulating it clearly, that's what I'm calling the infrastructure. And that's what I'm calling the real political mechanism. Because to me, being in the politic machine is not the politics. The decision making and the negotiating and the debating about resources is us, as that brother's program, us servicing us.
Lifting us.
Us lifting us. It's us having to go through that internal, and then out of that, we're sending and selecting, or we're negotiating who's going to get what out of these scarce resources. That's politics. That's internal politics. That's the stuff you don't see in other cultural groups that they're doing. It ain't that person that gets in that position. It's a lot of stuff going on before they get to that position. Even to say who's going to put up the money. But somebody's going to say, well, why should I support you? And that money don't have to be $50,000, $20,000, $10,000, $5,000. That could be $5, $10. That money is just as valuable for you to do the right thing in carrying out our plan. And that's so the study group and that internal, because we have to have the mechanism. We can't wait until you in there 15 years to figure out that you on the dole.
You only get
one cycle. And we don't see no movement, you out of there. And we got somebody else to go in there. That, to me, is the real politics that we have to, the internal politics that we have, the internal decision-making process. When I say politics, I'm thinking as an infrastructure, it's a decision-making process. So study groups, a decision-making process, and then selecting for a person to run for that particular office, and whatever that office may be or position may be, and then where to watch for eye. We're the invisible hand.
Let's grab a call. 646.
Hey, hold up, Brother Elliot and Brother Richie. How you doing, Mr. Richie? Did the white man give you a break this week?
Yeah, I believe. You know, I was in my weakened condition at that moment.
Okay, well, I'm glad to hear that, brother Richard. Listen, right quick, I was just calling to see, have y'all heard anything about this situation over in Nigeria? I was reading this post online, man, and they was talking about, man, the brother that got killed, David Johnson,
mm-hmm.
They left him over there in Nigeria, and that was the reason why he got killed.
Wait a minute. They did what, Jay?
They left him over there in Nigeria. They didn't do the right body count when they went there for the rescue and all of that. And that's what had happened to him.
Well, I, you know what, you got me, because I didn't hear any of the details about, you know, his activities or why he's there. They got a lot of covert, and I put a story about it on the Time for Awakening website. It's a lot of, and it's entitled "The Covert Wars in Africa" or something like that. I forgot the exact title of it. But they got a lot of these things going on the continent, where you got Green Berets, other SEALs, all these elite U.S. fighting forces over there, and the country, especially black folks, don't know why they're over there fighting. And I dare say these stupid black carcass officials, they have no clue what America's doing over there. Now, when it leaks out to the public, they give the spin about them chasing ISIS. That's before it was chasing Al-Qaeda. Now, Al-Qaeda, I don't know what happened to them. Maybe they went out of business. You don't even hear nothing about Al-Qaeda anymore. It's ISIS. Yeah, so I don't know. They're over in a lot of those countries. You don't know what they're doing over there until somebody gets killed. And then you say, well, Don, what was America doing over there?
It's absolutely bananas, man, when you put it into context, because they got all sorts of paid missionaries going on there doing things that we don't even have a clue about, you know, what the deal is. And, you know, this is affecting a whole bunch of people all over the world.
Exactly.
And, you know, they're always talking about Russia and what Russia did, but then we never talk about what we do all around the world. You know what I mean? Like, we some innocent bystanders in the whole global terrorism game. You know, like, we don't terrorize anybody. You know what this? This is absolute madness, man. It's madness.
You know, Jay, I mean, you raised, and this was the reason why I had the concern, because what out of 45, the positioning that he's projecting, which is where America is going, I ain't putting it on him, but he's articulating it, right? That now, before, after 1945, America finally becomes the superpower. Right. Europe is in disarray. They got to get a welfare program, call it the Marshall Plan. And, you know, to some degree, they couldn't deal with Southeast Asia. But amongst the Europeans, they had the Europeans on their back. Now America is saying they, you know, that they can go this thing alone as a military might. And they're using what you raised, Elliot, in my mind. They're using special force team. They're not going to go, we're going to send 100,000, 200,000 troops, because they know the American public is not going with for that. So what Obama did was show, glorify, we can go anywhere we want with few people and a drone.
And drones, yeah, exactly.
Yeah, but the truth of the matter is America can't go where they want and do what they want,
exactly,
all around the world, because exactly China and Russia won't allow them. That's
Jay? I mean, they're saying, because the thing that is a little, and I don't know why. I mean, some of my friends, they say you are Afropean, but the things that's disturbing is they're even telling the Europeans, you either going to go with us, because before they, you know, with the NATO, even through the UN, it was, you know, they had an alliance, right? They had the Atlantic Alliance, America and the European countries. But now they're telling, through this moment, they're saying, you not only are you going to pay us because we ain't providing your military back anymore. You're going to, you know, we don't care if you support us, whether we go after Iran or not. When they telling them, look, leave Iran alone, because if you mess with Iran, I mean, you messed up when you dealt with Iraq. You messed up when you got us to go with you with Libya. Now you go to Iran, this whole thing is over, and we're over here. And they're saying, U.S. is saying, I don't care. And what they telling us, and you, one concern that you raise all the time, through this tax bill, what you're seeing is, you know, the budget and the tax bill is that they're going to pump more money in the military going around the sequestration.
Yeah, but, you know, even with the tax bill, we don't even know how that's going to play out. I mean, in 45, he don't even know what he's doing, man. You know, 45 don't even have a clue on what he's doing. And I don't even know why people keep on talking about he knows what he's doing. You know, it's just sad, man. The whole country is going to hell. And I mean, I don't care, but it's just the fact that, you know, people don't realize that we as a nation is getting absolutely played, man. It's just crazy. It's absolutely crazy. You have to have a direction and a vision for a country to move forward and also to deal with your allies. But it don't even seem that they have that type of focus when even dealing with the allies. The allies are looking at us like we nuts. So, I mean, I don't see anything moving forward in a positive direction in this country. And then, on top of that, how can it get better when he's about to make these drastic tax cuts that's going to cause all sorts of problems? problems from what they're saying when it's all said and done. And the sad thing is that, you know, he talked about bringing back jobs and all of these things and building infrastructure and all this and that. Have you seen anything in the last 10 months that this wing nut has done? You know, I haven't seen anything. I'm trying to see what has been done that will justify the people putting this sick bastard in office.
Well, those people are supporting him. They're supporting him on a wing and a prayer.
And a wing and a prayer that's going to lead them to absolute disaster. But the thing is this. Can you believe what that piece of garbage said to that sister in regards to her husband? I mean, what kind of human being would say something to someone like that, man?
Well, wait a minute. I don't hear whites by and large upset with those remarks.
No, not at all.
I don't hear it.
Not at all. They feel that way.
I don't hear it except with the remarks at all.
Right. No, they don't. They don't have any type of
And that woman was a Democratic. No. She's some type of Democratic. Congressperson or?
Yeah.
Where's the outrage and vitriol from the whole Democratic Party? Where's the outrage and vitriol from these women's groups that always want to incorporate black women in their struggle?
None at all.
This man called a woman a liar. He not only called her a liar. He called the grieving widow a liar.
Yeah.
Like, what do they have to lie on this idiot about? Whatever stupid stuff he said, that's what he said.
Where is the pushback from the black community? Where's the pushback at all?
Right.
I mean, you know, the funny thing is, I knew that something was wrong with us when they still talk about that piece of garbage Hillary Clinton. I know we as a people.
You ain't hear her say nothing about it either. And she, you ain't hear her say nothing about it either. But when she was running for office, she wanted to incorporate every black woman she seen. Mothers of the movement, black women was her friends. Where they at now? Where they at? Why don't she stand up for that woman? And I'm quite sure I'm quite sure that woman supported Hillary Clinton. Was a Hillary Clinton supporter.
Of course, but you know it's so crazy. Everybody's talking about Hillary Clinton and this and that. But do you notice how everyone is all up in arms and talking about what's going on with Bush and Obama and their little remarks about 45 yesterday? You know what I mean? Like, they did such a great thing. And I think they all going to be together tomorrow. That's going to be a real interesting thing, boy. That's going to be interesting with them all together tomorrow.
And we have to, if you don't mind me saying, Jay, we have to be careful. Because my perspective is the reason why we don't hear any outrage or any criticism, especially when it gets to black people or even American foreign policy, because we're taking everything like it's entertainment. So we'd have been so inundated with live TV, and people say, people say they can't even understand why, you know, what pops in my head, Housewives of Atlanta or, you know, it used to be Marty Povich. Why these people come on and exhibit this kind of behavior to the world, but people want to watch it. And then when I say people want to watch it, I'm looking at my mother and father. They like, they into it. I go there and I'm like, how can y'all be watching this?
Because they're all the names that nothing got damn better than. That's wrong. What else do Daddy and Mama got better than do than to look at some crazy Negroes acting a fool? Shoot, if they really want to see it, all they got to do is look out the window. Sometimes they just want to sit in the comfort of the seat of their couch and look at these fools. How you gonna get mad at mama and daddy because they want to watch some fool nigga?
But the thing is, but the thing is,
you last Friday like a baby. I just need to cut it out. You need to leave mama and daddy alone.
Yeah, Ricky. Why you pull the cover off of mom and dad?
What's wrong with them, Elliot? I'm very disappointed in you, Ricky, talking about mama and daddy like that. Let them have some enjoyment. Yeah? They like watching Muppet Infected back in the day in the new thing. Come on now.
But the thing is that and the only reason I bring them up because I want to show how personal it is, Tom, and how much most of Americans are in tune to that. Those are highly rated shows. They ain't even going off. You know,
hey, listen, they done made rich men out of those individuals. That's the crazy thing. Think about it. Maury Povich has become a millionaire off of the backs of decadency of black men and black women. Mm-hmm. You know, think about that. Showing black women and black men at their lowest point, he's become a multimillionaire. That's crazy, man.
That really
says a lot about a lot of things.
Mm-hmm. And 45 got everybody talking about everything is a deal. And you're fired.
Yeah. And that's like, you know, the norm. You know, everybody feels that it's fired. You'll fight, you know what I mean? So mm-hmm. Now you don't have no respect for the workers. Now, you know, the way the country is going, I was just reading today in the paper. Now, this could shock you. They're about to open up a restaurant, like a fast food restaurant in Lower Manhattan in New York, to whereas now they're going to have kiosks, to whereas you're going to have to use a credit card and all of this to pay for it. And the only thing that they're going to do is have people there, I think, to serve you and cook the food. Other than that, you know, that's going to be it. So they're just going to show you right there of the form of automation that's coming. So now if all of this is going forward and moving forward, my question becomes, where are the jobs going to be for people?
Exactly.
You know what I mean? And what are we telling our kids what direction to go into? You know what I mean? I mean, don't you think at some point in time, the way that the insurance and the way things are going, that surgeries and things of that nature are going to become robotic also? Oh, don't you think that they're going to start having certain surgeries on the level of doing it through robotics? So that means they're not going to need a lot of people to be doctors and things of that nature. So, I mean, it's this society 20 or 30 years from now is going to be going on a whole nother level that I don't even think we're thinking about and visualizing. You know what I mean? The funny thing may be, you may need to go to another continent in order to apply your trade. You know, if you think about it, it's quiet as kept. But we don't think about it that way. You know, we don't even see it that way. You know? But look, man, I got to run. I just wanted to holler at y'all, good brothers. Are y'all having a guest on Sunday?
Right now, I'm not sure. But I'll post it. I'll put it up.
You know, the show during the day is a pretty good show. The show last Saturday, I got a chance to listen to it. Very good show, man. He's a good thing. But, oh, this is what I forgot to tell you. You know the brother Wellness. Man, you should look into the possibility of giving him a show, brother Richard.
Wait a minute, which one?
Brother Wellness, the brother you had on from, I think it was St. Louis.
You know what? You're taking the words out of my mouth. I'm thinking about to kind of add him to maybe once a month, giving you know, little tips and all. You know, being a have a portion of the program.
I spoke to him because I called him about something. And he said that he would love to do a show because I don't know if you've seen any of his videos on YouTube, but he has great information.
He
man.
Does.
I really think that he could be real beneficial to what you and the brothers are trying to do, man. You know, that's something you should definitely take into strong consideration if you could.
Yeah, well, you took the word because me and Richard was talking about that. Yeah,
man. I think he would do an excellent show because he has a lot of information that we need out here as far as health wise. Because I got one of his books, man, and I tell you, I really like it. I really like the information that he has in the book.
Oh, so you contacted him and picked up? Oh, great.
Some of the recipes and using it.
Great. Amen.
But please,
Jay, thanks.
Please, man. You know, please, if you could give him a show maybe once a week, man, to add to the network. I think it'd be a hell of a thing for the network. All right, brother. Be good. Talk to you Sunday.
All right. Yeah. Peace.
I'll tell them.
He kind of took a page out of our thinking there, Brother Rich, because we were talking about that.
Well, it's good. It's good that diversity of, you know, thought is out there, and it's, you know, definitely need the information.
And I'm glad that some of the callers contact the man and you know, because listen, the program is about solutions. A lot of our people out there, we're not exposed to some of these men in other areas that are not only talking but putting forth solutions that will help our people.
Right. Right. That's it.
You know, it's kind of funny just talking about health and eating. When he was on, he was talking about a little fast food places in our area carcinogens. I can't pronounce it. You know what I'm talking about.
Yeah, yeah.
That kind of calcifies the brain where you can't think or do critical thinking. You remember when he was talking about it on the program?
Right, right, the whole thing of the piano.
It reminded me of a clip that Brother Ralph sent me about this. Mm-hmm. The woman had a restaurant, and she was buying this Popeye's chicken and reselling it. And it was in the black community, reselling the chicken at her restaurant.
Get out of here?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Reselling the Popeye's chicken at her restaurant for more money. And black folks was in there buying and eating it. And they interviewed this one, looked like he was about 300 or 400 pound black guy, talking about, oh, chicken's good. I mean, come on. And the name of her place was Mama's Country Kitchen. It's a white woman that owns it. We get that kind of goes back to what we was talking about with the conversation with Sister Peoples. Mm-hmm. Listen, my neighborhood in South Philly, all you seen on a lot of those corners down there was Asian places with all them fried chicken wings and salt, pepper, ketchup. That's their favorite three words. Salt, pepper, ketchup. Salt, pepper, ketchup. You go in there, all that old fried stuff, the grease they never change. Been in the places, the filthy back there in the kitchen. All them is or stop and go. If you notice, when the neighborhood gets gentrified, Richard, all of those businesses seem to leave the community.
Right.
And they don't leave on their own. Those white folks don't want those businesses in the community. So they end up leaving. And they'll follow black folks wherever they have went. But white folks are not going to have those type of businesses in their communities. They're not.
Nope.
I go down there and look at the same corners where those places used to be, and they ain't there no more. They might have a beer garden out there or some old restaurant where they could sit out front and eat and all that type of stuff. Those are the places, those are the things that replace those old nasty places and stop and goes and all. Mm-hmm. And you done seen it move over to your side.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Because, you know, right around at the 20th and Federal, where those spots used to be on each corner, you know, old bars.
The coffee shop.
Yeah, used to be bars. Somebody gets shot every weekend and all. Now all the places.
Like you said, every Saturday they sitting out there. I mean, really every day. You know, by the time I come back in sometimes, it's just in the morning. When I leave in the morning, somebody's sitting out there drinking coffee, eating their breakfast, and I go a little further down, and it's a bagel place. And the line be around the corner.
Wow.
Getting a bagel. Mm-hmm. You know? So,
You know, and Elliot, the realtor, told me that this Point Breeze, this area that I'm living in, which is up and coming gentrified area, they said, well, like, look, the value is not going to go up anymore right now because, you know, Point Breeze is a business district. It needs more businesses to cater to the people who are moving in. Because they need someplace to go, which goes to your point, because, you know, a lot of these, what's there, they're not servicing the people who are moving in.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So that's the projection now to try to find, you know, and they go, I wonder where all this business money come from. They can open a bicycle shop, an antique shop. I don't know how many bread and cakes is being made because, I mean, it's a bakery everywhere.
Well, you think, listen, Richard, we talked about it when the Taki Kanban was on, about these venture capital places. Mm-hmm. I think for the past 5 years, they've raised like record numbers of monies. But, by the same token, they were saying that only 0.5% of the money even go to any black ventures. But a lot of these venture capital, they're giving money to these places when they talk about starting businesses in these gentrified cities. These white folks can get access to monies. They can. You can. They can. And start 2 or 3 businesses. One fail, they can start one up. Listen, you start a business and fail, it might take you under.
Yeah.
They can start a business, not do so good, fold up, and then start a new one. And have the capital to do it.
And that's why, you know, the other element of, you know, thinking, we have to, right now, I'm putting 36 years, you know, which would be that's 12th grade, but right now I'm taking them, a child, 3 cycles of children that we've developed. So, you know, this is 2017, 36 years, was that 2040 something?
Okay.
That's what we, and designating the area that we're going to be in. So we look at the physical infrastructure. Well, we'll need schools, we'll need parks, we'll need supermarkets, we'll need recreation facilities. That's the kind of thinking through we have to have in order to be able to tell people now, this is what we're working towards. And this is what it'll look like. And this is what we're producing. And no child is going to come out of here, no matter what their acumen or what their gift is, that they are going to be sent out there to make, to be successful on their own. And this, because in a capitalist society, everything's for sale. Well, we ain't selling our people like that. No. That's our wealth. And if you don't need them, that's fine, because we are producing them to be able to produce what we need service ourselves.
Yeah. Yeah.
If we need doctors, we don't have to have computer specialists, but if we need them, but if we need doctors, you know, we need psychologists. If we need nurses, if we need, so, you know, all those teachers. And I'm thinking of the social services, because what we need to do is build the people.
Yeah. capable of being self-sustaining.
Right.
Not dependent on Europeans for our very existence.
And when we go outside and say we want to trade with somebody, then we look at the Caribbean. We look at Brazil. We look at the continent of Africa. And we don't just deal with anybody. Like, y'all got to be in y'all self-sustaining mode, too. Because why we need to deal with you, and all you're going to do is bring us down.
Yep. Well, tomorrow, got the new programs. And you know what? I think, in fact, I'm more than sure, the morning show, SST, with Troy Wilmore, won't be, because I think Troy will be out of town. So his program will not be live tomorrow. But Dr. Rogers' program, Black Reality Think Tank, which is Saturday from 4 to 6, will be aired. And then we'll be on Sunday, but the schedule will start Sunday morning at 11 o'clock with Revive, which is the POC, and then Time for Awakening Sunday evening at 7. The week starts out again with Brother Oshie and Black Perspectives Mondays, Wednesdays, and Fridays from 11 to 1. On Thursday evenings, you have us lifting us, a Black Economic Empowerment Program. And that's Thursday evenings from 9 to 11. Again, it'll be some new programming starting in November, probably around the first week of November, added to the lineup. At least two new programs and possibly a third. But things are growing, Richard, and we're going to keep this thing moving.
That's it.
I want to thank everybody for listening to the program this evening. Lively discussion, as always. And again, I want to thank our guest, Sister Paula Peoples. We'll be getting updates from her with things going on here, centered around the activities that she's always been on the forefront in. So we'll get updates from her. If she doesn't come on personally, we'll get some things that we can kind of pass along to the Philadelphia community and Black communities nationwide about some of the activities here that might be helpful in other cities. But again, I want to thank everybody for listening to the program this evening. Lively discussion, as always, and we'll be back on Sunday, Lord willing, to continue on this path towards an awakening. Peace.
If you're driving through the country on a lazy afternoon, or you're watching your children playing after school, they seem to be so unaware. I know the things that they'll soon have to take care of. We've got to do something, yeah, save the children. Soon it will be their turn to try and save the world. Right now they seem to play such a small part of. And little Mary, she said she got to teach school. If we know all we say we know about the problem. Oh.
got to do something, yeah, to save the children. Soon it will be their turn to try and save the world. We've got to do something, yeah, to save the children. To save the children. To save the children.